This program is about marriage and was produced by the Radical Feminist Collective of Dayton Women's Liberation. It is not intended as a thorough political analysis of marriage as an institution, but focuses on our own experiences and feelings about why we got married and how we are being pressured to get married or remarried and what we expected marriage to do for us. It also explores the beginnings of our love and respect for other women. Our discussion is interspersed with women's music suggestive of our theme.
My father sits at night with no lights on. His cigarette glows in the dark. The living room is still. I walk by, no.
thinking that I couldn't forget was the end of 1969, when my mother was dying and I had spent a month with her. And then I went back to California and I was really sick. I had mono, but then I got over it and I was tripping on mescaline. And when I was starting to come down from it, I had found out that my mother had died. I just completely almost flipped out. Then I flew back home. And I was living with this person, David. I got all gooped up, so I got off the pills and I got pregnant. It was real hard to get an illegal abortion, or a legal one. So I didn't want to stay with my father, and I said, oh, well, if I got married, then, you know, that would be a good mind to have my father. You know, you can't expect me to stay with you if I'm getting married and I'm going to have my own family. So that would put my father off. I felt David had stayed with me when I flipped out, and I felt like I owed something to him. But he had given me something, so since this is what he wanted, and everything, so I did. I had an abortion before that out in California that he had helped me with. It was a legal one. And so this time when I was pregnant too, he was telling me all the time, well, you know, you already had one abortion. Are you never going to be able to have kids? Just because you have morning sickness, just because you hate the way you're feeling, you're going to have to face it sometime. Why not now? You know, day in, day out. And I wanted to get away from everybody in there and just go somewhere and cry. And I felt really unhappy then, and I didn't know what to do. And I really did lose control over making decisions for myself at that point.
How did you feel right away when you got married?
Oh, I didn't want to. My mother didn't get married until she was late. You know, until she was really old, and I never thought about myself as getting married or making that mistake. And even I always felt guilty afterwards because I was dishonest to myself, and that kind of hung me up too, admitting to myself that I actually did get married because I did lose control because I was scared. And it's still with me hard now, getting that control back, you know, because of marriage. Like, I worry all the time, have it over me about child custody for Jesse, and the whole bit from that one mistake. It took me a really long time to get out of the thing that it's completely dead now. I always thought that, you know, we should get it together as a family. It was hard, too, because I connected everything up, you know, with being pregnant, with being married when I didn't want to be married, but I did it anyway, with my mother's death. You know, and I kept thinking the whole time, well, if my mother never died, then I never would have flipped out like that, so I never would have gotten married. And yeah, everything was just so intertwined.
I had the same thing too, only my father died. And I can remember being tired of hauling and fetching for myself. That it was really nice to have a man carry my luggage up 4 flights of stairs when I was going to school rather than have to do that myself. You know, really dumb stuff like that. But I can remember really being tired of just sort of foraging for myself and trying to take care of myself. And, you know, my father had always done that. He'd always transported me rather than me having to take a train or a plane someplace. I always was taken everywhere and sort of dropped off at the door and picked up at the door and that kind of thing. And I really was just tired of taking care of myself, and so I got married. And I married somebody who was very much like my father. It was like the easy thing to do at the moment was to get married.
I was so dependent on my mother that I had to get married to break that dependency. Now, it wasn't like so much that she was asking something from me, but it was that it was in order to break that tie with her, that's why I got married. You know, was that's the only way I could escape from her. And then I had to break that dependency on my husband. You know, it's like some kind of terrible cycle that repeats itself.
I'm sure nobody gets married for any good reason. Did you?
The only reason I could think it was that I got married, I was supposed to. I mean, it never occurred to me not to. As a matter of fact, to entertain the idea was, when I was getting married, was like there was something wrong with you if you didn't. You know, I always suspected.
Are you much more socially accepted if you're married?
Well, it wasn't not socially accepted if you were married. You were socially unaccepted if you weren't.
Yeah, that's
right. I mean, it was really a weird thing to do, not get married. And it obviously wouldn't be of your own choosing not to do it.
carousel. Plaster mask, but who can tell? Angels in heaven and devils in hell. Watch me round and round. When the children have had their ride, they can go, but I must bide. Up on a pedestal, nowhere to hide. Watch me round and round. Flying horses, they are just little girls who wish too much to be loved when they grow up. Watch me round and round. Merry-go-rounds, they are merry for those who are free to come and go. I'm bolted down to the merriment show. Watch me round and round. My prayers were answered the same way I'd planned. I got my status, there's nowhere to stand. I've got my wings, now there's nowhere to land. Watch me round and round. Wished I may and wished I might. Wished my fun could last all night. Chains of tinsel cut me tight. Watch me round and round. When the children have had their ride, they can go, but I must bide. Up on a pedestal, nowhere to hide. Watch me round and round. I'm a horse on a carousel. Plaster mask, but who can tell? Angels in heaven and devils in hell. Watch me round and round.
Oh, when I go visit my relatives, it's always, I'm the oldest person in my family who's not married or who hasn't been married, and it's always like, when are you getting married, or, you know, I mean, this is the level they relate to me, you know, it's just like, it's not, well, what are you doing now, what are you into, it's like, when are you getting married,
or, it's like, are you seeing someone, you can succeed,
yeah,
you
it's like,
get married.
Yeah, well, I'm married one of these days, and then she'll be okay, you know.
It doesn't change that much.
Well, I don't know. I get the impression that it has.
Oh, I get this
stuff
all the time.
I think it's changed. I'm really ashamed to admit. But it's funny because I know once Joy and I was, we were out somewhere and somebody had asked me whether I was married, and it was always hard, even the day I was getting married, to admit that I was getting married. Because I knew so well why I was getting married.
Of course, it may have been the kind of friends you had or something. Yeah. I don't know when it was getting married. It was never. It was also something wrong with you if you didn't have children. But, you know, as a matter of fact, there was something wrong with Walt and me because we waited 4.5 years.
But I still get the business all the time now because I'm not because I'm not married, but because I'm not remarried. You know, I've been divorced for 4 years, and now there's people are coming around saying, "You're not married again yet?"
That's a shame.
Oh,
such a nice girl.
No. I feel like you was married. Yeah.
I can remember
to take care of you.
I can remember when we were in high or in college, the librarian, the geology library, was about 65 and really cool. Like at 65, she was taking swimming lessons and she'd never swum before and all these things.
Wow.
But she had never been married. And I can remember all the guys saying, you know, it's really too bad that she didn't get married. You know, she would have been so much happier. And it's really terrible because she's such a nice person and somehow she never found a man. And she would have made such a good wife and such a good mother. And people really felt sorry for her because she'd never been married. And yet, you know, she really was much better off than most of the women her age who had been married.
Was she happy?
I'm sure.
I really think she was. I mean, she was just really cool. She did a whole lot of new things, and she traveled, and she was really alive. You know, she wasn't, like, you know, just absorbed in other people's lives. She was still interested in her own life, you know, and doing things for herself.
Settle.
gonna marry. I ain't gonna settle down. I'm gonna stay right here. I'm gonna celebrate a freedom that I found. Ain't gonna be easy. It ain't gonna be like these. No, no. If I can't do as I please.
I still, after all these years and all this feminism that means so much to me, that I still have this kind of feeling that I understand men, you know, or that I like men in a weird kind of sick way. Because I was, in a lot of ways, I was really raised to be a man. And that's what it is. You know, and
I sort of identify with men.
Yeah, I was raised to succeed. I don't remember ever being encouraged to marry when I got older. I remember, like, as I became sexually active, that what my parents worried about was that I would be forced into getting married because I would get pregnant, and that I would ruin my life. And even after living with one man for 4 years, that they were still worried that I would be forced into getting married, and that it would be, you know, just the end of everything. Because in one sense, I was supposed to be a man. I was supposed to have career goals. In fact, my father and I had a horrible fight when I was 13, because he said, you have to know what career you want. Mm-hmm. At 13, I don't even know other little boys that go for that at 13.
I'm sure they do.
They probably do, but my father,
it's kind of unusual to say over.
Yeah, you have to know what you want to be. You know, you have to have a goal, and I was a much more goal-oriented child than almost anyone I knew. I did know what I wanted to be, too. I wanted to be a social worker, but he didn't think that was good enough. I mean, that was a woman's career. I remember consciously, like, when I went into high school, I was going to take Spanish and art. And he said, and I'd been taking Spanish all through elementary school and junior high. And he said I should broaden my horizons and take French and journalism, because art was such a prissy thing to take. And journalism was, like, more of a challenge and stuff like that. And really being pressured into this, but at the same time, over my head was the fact that I was a woman, and if I got married, it would ruin everything. See, like, a man could be pressured into having careers and having goals, but if he got married, it wouldn't ruin everything. You know, somehow that I was forced into this male mold, but if I got married, all of a sudden it would come crushing down on me that I was a woman, and that all these things were just ridiculous for me to be thinking about and worrying about. And it's really freaky.
I got some of that, too. In fact, my advisor in college, the thing he advised me to do, he wanted me to go to Harvard and to grad school. And this is when I was childhood. And he said, and you should marry a man who would be a house husband. And he was serious. I mean, this was what he was advising me to do.
The game, aware of tricks I do not want to see. I do not want to see. A card is pawned, the bets are placed, the loaded dice make three, and no one sees but me. Doesn't anyone see but me? The roulette wheel goes round and round and stops a bit too short. It's made to stop too short. It is built to stop too short. The chips are down. The croupier laughs and calls a cheated player sport. He laughs and calls him sport. And the sport laughs with him. The sport laughs with him. There are no clocks upon the gilded walls. The drapes are drawn in everlasting night. We never close. The neon light blinks at the sky. We run an honest house. The advertisements lie. For I have chanced to glimpse behind the imitation antique mirror. And I have seen the pupil of the boss's spying eye. Conscious pious soldiers gambled at the bottom of the cross. Even his ragged robe was lost. So would you kind of care to tell me, boss? What chance have we? What chance have we? Would you kind of care to tell me, boss? The game is fixed. It's just a funny, foolish, never-ending joke. A never-ending joke. A never-ending joke. The dealer winks and beckons with a toothless, taunting grin. I know I cannot win. I know I cannot win. The game is fixed. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. God damn it. Deal me in.
Something so insidious about it, because like I can remember I was in a circle of friends who thought it was not cool to get married, and I felt myself that I didn't want to get married, and I was living with the guy and that was fine and everything was fine and why should we get married and stuff, and yet when he said that he wanted to get married, I was caught up in this feeling, you know, and I wasn't under pressure, and I sort of got carried away with it, and I mean it was just this emotional feeling I had about, I think it boils down to some kind of security. Like once we were married, I felt that
you did it.
A whole part of my energy was freed up. And apparently I hadn't really been conscious of it, but it was like I had been expending all this energy in maintaining a kind of a pseudo-independence, or being afraid that I was going to wind up alone, or there was some, you know, something going on there that wasn't really, that I intellectually didn't buy at all. But then emotionally, I really, you know, got caught up in and afterwards felt this great sense of relief, you know. And it was really against my principles and against the pressure. I mean, I wasn't really under pressure.
I really got married to get things settled. And I felt the same relief that I knew I was going to get it. When I was going through college, it was the idea that, like, if you married a guy, you should marry a guy who's going to have a good career, and you would make the sacrifices. Like, you could have a career, too, but you had to be willing to move when he had to move and stuff like that. So I knew, well, if I'm going to get married, there's no point in going ahead and getting my PhD in geology because that's not a mobile thing. I should do something else and something. If I'm going to get married, you know, I either have to decide to not get married and go ahead with my own career or get an adaptable career and get married. So I wanted to get it all settled, so I got married, you know, and I started teaching and got on geology.
I bought the whole thing. I mean, I really bought the whole thing. Yeah, well, I would get married because that's what you had to do. That's all. I mean, that was the way life went, right? And you were some kind of aberration if you didn't. So it was getting settled, sure, so my life could go on.
Right, well, I felt the same way. You know, you had
but it wasn't even specifically like careers. And I would continue to work as long as I found it enjoyable. But at whatever point that I didn't find it enjoyable, I could quit and be taken care of. So it was a great deal of shock that one day I woke up to realize that in order for us to eat, I had to work. And I remember being very angry and felt like I had been had.
I remember that too. I always thought, well, people, you know, once you get married, you can quit. And then I realized that my husband was putting subtle pressure on me to continue to work because he had always lived with his mother. His mother had always worked. And he couldn't imagine having a housewife at home who didn't do anything but go home and not work. And so, you know, and my mother had always worked too, but somehow I'd always thought that choice would be there, and then I realized it really wasn't. You know, even though I don't think I could have stood it, I think it would climb the wall, still I thought I should have that privilege if I wanted it.
You know, that's what pisses me off, so, is that I didn't buy any of that, and I knew David, and I knew, you know, he's a writer, and I knew if it was anything that I was going to be doing supporting, and I still
did it.
And I still did it on top of that, and just got energy drained for, you know, off and on. That's what really pisses me off.
I, in my head, somewhere along the line, decided that I had a right to be taken care of, you know, that because I was a woman, that was my right, which is bullshit.
But I think that was part of
that.
Yeah,
that was part of that. I got married, angry at Walt because I had to work. That was his fault.
I can remember, you know, when I was young, I used to sit around and plan out my life, you know, for 10 years. Well, first I'll go to college for 4 years, and maybe for 2 years I'll do the Peace Corps, and then I'll do the, and then I'll get married. And, like, it always ended when I would get married, because that would be the settled thing, and nothing else would go on from there. That would just be it.
There's something very final about sort of, you know, like the idea of we're trying to complete the mating process. I mean, our whole... from the very beginning. I mean, we're given dolls, we're given bride dolls, we're given all this kind of stuff. And there's something about the mating process that once you've done that, you sort of, that's sort of the final leap. That the rest of it's just sort of, that's the top of the hill.
Takes care of itself.
Right, just takes care of itself.
But yeah, I think the one of the scary things to me, though, is that, like Pam was saying, she really had a feeling, and that's the feeling I had, that I knew. And yet somehow still, this insidious... Mm. Some kind of belief that something was going to be remedied or something was going to live happily ever after, even though I knew perfectly well.
Right.
Okay, that wasn't the case.
I think I had some kind of subtle recognition that I wasn't able to be articulate about, but the day I got married, I was absolutely traumatized. I was just hysterical the night before. I didn't want to do it. I told my mother I wasn't going to do it.
You know what?
And then I just couldn't stand it.
I know why everybody, even if they, you know, tried to buy the lie, that, you know, marriage was good, why they knew that it wasn't underneath it, because we all came from the nuclear family, and saw our mothers being ripped off and pig, that you knew, you know. I mean, how many good marriages
and
good family situations?
Yes, but I always thought it was my mother. I mean, my mother couldn't hack it right, just there was nothing wrong with her, but when I got married...
Yeah, it would be different.
Yeah.
Again, my parents are one of those ones who really are the good people, the people who are... for all these years have really done things for each other. You know, like my mother has rheumatoid arthritis, and so my father works 14 hours a day so that he can make enough money so they can retire early and go to Arizona. So I expected to get somebody like my father when I got married, you know, who would do all these things, and who would, you know, the ultimate self-sacrificing man, which is not too common.
You know,
it wasn't that, yeah, but that's what I expected. I mean, I expected to have the same kind of marriage that my parents had.
And they had a good one.
And they had a very good one.
in spite of it.
Do you think you would have still been happy though, even married to a self-sacrificing man who did everything for you and you never was in control of your own life?
Well, that isn't really, their marriage wasn't that way when they were young. See, now my mother's at a point where she really can't do very much of anything.
Remember that thing we read that had the line in about woman is the opiate of the people?
Yes, opiate of the masses.
Yeah, like instead of religion, woman, you know, I still think that all the time, like we're the ones that placate people and make the peace and keep put people back together, especially men, and keep everything, the wheels turning and everything going. And oh,
this is what I feel about that. Since men are really, I mean, I feel bad for them and all, but since they're oppressors and ripping off, and they're not going to give that up, save all that love and good feelings and give it to your sister. Do not.
Experiences I had in terms of being able to recognize that I really liked women more than I liked men, or that I really liked women at all, or that I didn't like women to begin with. You know, the whole competition thing and how we're brought up to compete with each other, and that for the male prize, and really that the first, I don't remember when it was, but it was very early in my involvement in women's liberation, that I learned that I really did like women more than men, and that women had as much or more to say than men, and that you're not constantly being sapped or drained.
Well, I thought that I was a strong woman until I met you. I belong to living. But you took all that I had to give, and you called it giving. And the war you left inside my heart is like a small child weeping. Some mornings when I wake up, I remember when you used to lie beside me. And now I know you only meant to hide me. And the war you left inside my heart is like a plain that's barren. Loving is letting go. I knew I shouldn't try to change you. Someone in you will always be a stranger. And the war you left inside my heart is like a dark wave breaking. Yes, loving is letting go. Wish to let another grow, believing. Letting go that doesn't need a leaving. And the war you left inside my heart is only what you really meant by freedom. The leaves are falling off the limb, the colors turn to him that's empty. And I know your love was only meant to tempt me. And the war you left inside my heart is like the whole world dying. Yes, I thought that I was a strong woman until I met you. I belong to living. But you took all that I had to give, and you call it giving. And the war you left inside my heart is like a small child weeping.
How can we keep relating to men if they're so bad?
I don't think all men are trying to work all through in my head about a month ago why I stayed with my husband. You know, what is it I get out of it? And I finally came to the conclusion that my husband does a whole lot of things for me that my parents did. Like, you know, mothers sort of take care of you when you're hurt, you know, or, you know, sort of do say the things you need to have said to you when you're hurt, or just sort of get you, I don't know exactly what, or let you act like a child, or... Like, together, my husband and I can act like children. We play games with each other and things like that that we can't do with anybody else. I mean, or we usually don't. I mean, ordinarily, if you go out with other people, you act like an adult. But, you know, together, we don't have... There are a lot of things like that. Like, I really feel like that together we have a family, you know, just the two of us, that we have... That he gives me the things that my parents gave me.
Is he maybe your best friend?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. But even more than that, in the sense that all the really good friends I've had, I've never quite had that kind of relationship where I can, where it you can go both ways. Like, I can be a parent to him and he can be a parent to me, and we can have an adult relationship, or we can switch down and have a children's relationship or something like that.
If I be your lady, what will you be? Will you build me a castle and love me truly? Yes, well, castles ain't freedom things. Them golden rings, they just bind. If I be your lady, can I be me? I've got my own kingdom that out of town. If I come to your castle, well, what of mine? Mine's made of space and flowers, secret hours with nobody near. If I be your lady, will you be
really involved with, you know, just when I was in college and you just lived with somebody. I mean, just because you...
I really have a feeling that that has a lot to do with intimacy. And that, you know, our culture really makes intimacy very difficult. But I think, you know, women are all sort of geared into, you know, creating their intimate relationship with a man.
Yeah.
I think that's what's happened in my marriage, you know, that I have the same kind of feeling. There's a big gap between the intimacy I have with my husband and the intimacy I have with other people. You know, there's a big
because you live with him, so he's
right.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, we're sort of, I mean, for me, that was the only way it could have happened. I mean, that was what I sort of fell into, because, I mean, I could see where I was conditioned in a lot of ways to allow that intimacy to happen, you know, with him in a long-term relationship with a man, where I wasn't looking for it to happen, you know, in other kinds of relationships.
Yeah. Now, I can see having that kind of relationship with a woman. Except that most women I know are involved with a man, or don't, and they don't have the time that it takes, you know, because like we've been married for 7 years, and we knew each other for three years before we got married. So like, it takes a really long time to develop that kind of relationship, and it takes a lot of time, you know. You have to live with somebody, I think. And, you know, most of us never live with a woman.
It's so much,
you know,
easier and so much better.
So we never, you know, like, you have a friend, but all my friends, most of my friends are married. So their husbands make demands on them or their family.
Well, that's
so you never get to make that kind of relationship with a woman ordinarily unless there's some...
That's a thing that's such a relief about not living with David anymore when we live... After, you know, like, living with Joy is so much easier.
Yeah, well, the thing that bothers me is, like, I'm not relating to any man right now. But somehow I might be looking at things more romantically because of that. But somehow I feel like the difference between two women living together and a man and a woman living together, unless, except in some circumstances, is that like the relationship that Lois is talking about also includes sexual honesty and sexual relationship to one another. And I don't like know what your relationship to Joy is, but I would guess that both of you are getting like sexual gratification or that interest outside of your relationship and have another kind of relationship between each other. And the question is, does that mean that, well, like for me, I would sort of guess or theorize, not necessarily from past practice, that like being able to also be honest and open and share sexual feelings with one another, as well as all the other feelings we're talking about, would make the relationship much more bonding.
Yeah,
and since I personally am not willing at this point to have a sexual relationship with a woman, that still means that the person I have a sexual relationship with will be a man, and I'd like to have other things besides sex.
That's one of the things I was just going to say. You know, like the only reason I still relate to men is just for that physical intimacy. Because it took me so long to overcome all of my conditioning about having sex with men, and then finally I broke through that and, you know, really got accustomed to it and started to dig it. But I had even more, you know, conditioning about, you know, sex with a woman, you know, that never entered my mind. And And so, you know, now it boils down to the thing where I actually, you know, enjoy being with women more, to do things and to talk with them and everything, but I still have this dependency on men for physical intimacy, you know, even when I don't like the men that much as a person. Which is really,
I find it really frightening, the points that you bring up, Robin, because I was thinking when David and I were really close and it wasn't an oppressive relationship, sex was really good. And I trusted him more than any other male, and, you know, I could say what I wanted and what to do, so he was a really good lover. And that's what kept our relationship going for a long time, too, because I knew it was good for with him, because he made it a point, you know, to know what I wanted, and I could trust him, and I couldn't do that with other men. And so, you know, I'm young, I like sex, so it was a good reason to stay with him or to get trapped into an impressive relationship. Which really, it still frightens me,
that
whole...
Yeah, because it's hard to find that kind of relationship where the man does care about whether you have any pleasure, whether you're satisfied or, you know. And yet, like, I feel like Joy does, like, that I do the skitsy kind of thing, you know, where I'll get involved with a guy sexually that I don't really like or respect that much, you know, just because I'm horny.
Yeah.
And then that makes me hate myself, you know. And now, you know, I'm just sort of trying to deal with that in terms of not letting myself get emotionally involved with them. You know, just sort of,
yeah.
I'm beginning to use them. And yeah. I don't know whether I really like that, but...
I think that's funny. Joy was talking about how men always talk about when they get into a sexual relationship or something, that how they don't want to use a woman, because that's always the way they play.
I feel guilty
about
using
men.
That's how I'm feeling right now.
I don't think so. I think
too.
That's right on to use men. I think men use women more often than
men. I think it's really arrogant of men anyway to feel like they're always using the female and that it doesn't work the other way around.
But anyway, one of the things that, you know, like, in spite of this dependency on men that's still there and that I can't, you know, deny, that my becoming very close to women has changed my relationships with men, so that now I have some friendships with men that are really beautiful, and they're like the way I relate to women. And that is what's so strange, and it just blows out my mind, because it's like, for a long time I didn't have anything to do with men, and I was just with women all the time because I was so angry. And I think I learned something about being close and learned something about relating from being close to women.
So fine, yeah. Something about how we got to feel so fine. We haven't always been this strong, and we're not as strong now as we're gonna be. It takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of pain, too. We used to think that women really were inferior. We used to think that we were only good for pleasing men, having babies, doing housework, having shit jobs, doing volunteer work, and, you know, sex. 2, 3, 4. We didn't know that women could get together and play rock music, fix cars, give abortions, love our sisters. Stay single. Choose our own lifestyle. And, you know, say no. 2, 3, 4. So high, yeah.
This recorded program on marriage was created and produced by the Radical Feminist Collective of Dayton Women's Liberation. The music, in order of performance, was That's the Way I've Always Heard It Should Be, sung by Carly Simon, The Carousel, sung by Buffy St. Marie, a selection from Ain't Gonna Marry, performed by the Chicago Women's Liberation Rock Band, Dori Previn's The Game, Sound and Fury from the Fanny Hill album, If I Be Your Lady, sung by Carol Hall, The War You Left, performed by Joy of Cooking, and So Fine, sung and played by the New Haven Women's Liberation Rock Band. Dayton Women's Liberation holds monthly meetings for women interested in finding out more about the women's liberation movement. We are listed in the Dayton telephone book under Women's Liberation.